needs to be a more of an opportunity for women to participate in all parts of society, certainly, but also in discourse on this kind of peace process.
Afghan women making their voices heard in finding peace. It's Thursday, January 2nd, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Doug Bernard in Washington. Also ahead this half hour, Australia continues burning and attending a live music concert live in your own home via virtual reality. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Dry conditions, hot weather, and strong winds keep the wildfires in Australia going, with new blazes sparking almost every day. Officials say more than 200 bushfires are burning throughout the country. Since early September, fires have killed 12 people, destroyed more than 4 million hectares of land, surrounded cities, forced evacuations, and killed wildlife. But as VOA's Zlatica Hoke reports, that didn't stop Sydney from staging its world-renowned fireworks display to usher in the new year.
The smoke above the Sydney Harbour dimmed the otherwise spectacular New Year's Eve fireworks show on the Harbour Bridge. The annual event took place despite calls for cancellation in solidarity with parts of the country hit by the fires. But Sydney authorities said the budget had been allocated for the fireworks more than a year ago, and that it also helped publicize a donation fund for the fire-affected areas. Elsewhere in the state of New South Wales, firefighters watched helplessly as the fiery inferno devoured trees and houses.
It was always going to come one day, and the conditions now are dry everywhere, you know, we've got no chance, no water, nothing, so.
3 years of drought has made the bush bone dry and easy to catch fire. A shortage of water and other resources makes it hard to stop the blazes from spreading.
Not only are the firefighters on the ground being stretched, but it's really challenging to try and get aircraft in to support them.
As the winds bring the fire closer to their homes, residents are forced to flee.
We were about 8 adults and 9 kids, and we came down here because the place we were staying at, my parents-in-law place, burned down this morning. So we came down to the beach to evacuate and get closer to some clean air. And, you know, we're sitting there happily for a few hours. Wind suddenly dropped. Couldn't see a thing.
Thousands of people headed for the coast to get some fresh air, but the smoke followed them.
It's been like this for a week now, an underlying threat, but this is surreal. And as you can feel, the wind has just changed so suddenly. So the front's passing through and the fires over there are now going to be heading straight for all these houses, which is where we live. So it's pretty scary.
Officials in New South Wales say this has been the worst fire season the state has experienced. The Australian government is deploying military aircraft and vessels to help emergency services in the fire-ravaged states of New South Wales and Victoria in the east. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on voanews.com. China's central bank says it will cut the amount of money banks will be required to have on hand in an effort to boost the slowing economy. Officials in Afghanistan say Taliban insurgents killed at least 28 pro-government forces in overnight attacks in the country's north, despite the harsh weather. A peaceful Hong Kong march drawing tens of thousands of anti-government protesters on New Year's Day spiraled into chaos as police fired tear gas into the crowd. And severe flooding hit Indonesia's capital, killing at least 9 people and displacing thousands more. Read and watch more on VOA Asia Facebook and Twitter, plus the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. In 2019, Afghanistan witnessed 2 major events. The first was an initial step toward a possible peace deal between the Taliban and the United States. The second was a closely monitored presidential election. Both events directly affect Afghans, and in particular, Afghan women. VOA's Najiba Kali and Lima Nyanzi spoke to both U.S. and Afghan representatives and filed this report, narrated by Behzhan Hamdad.
The Taliban regime was particularly tough on the women of Afghanistan. And soon after their ouster in 2001, women across the country embraced their freedom. 18 years later in 2019, Afghanistan is still fighting an ongoing war with the Taliban, and peace talks between the U.S. and Taliban begin earlier this year. U.S. Representative Chrissy Houlihan and Adam Schiff believe it is important for Afghan women's concerns to be heard during any kind of peace negotiation.
One of the reasons why I've been an advocate for Afghan women and their health, Afghan women and their education, making sure that we think about the role of women in conflict, is because there needs to be a more of an opportunity for women to participate in all parts of society, certainly, but also in discourse on this kind of peace process.
Afghan women need to be at the table as part of the Afghan government delegation in making these decisions. And then I'll have confidence that women and girls' rights are being respected.
In Kabul, Afghan politician Fawzia Koofi says it is important to remember who the Taliban are before negotiating.
I believe it will be premature to judge that the Taliban have completely changed. We still see the Taliban fighting inside Afghanistan. We have witnessed that they have challenged women's education and rights.
In 2019, Afghan President Ashraf Ghani initiated a consultative grand assembly of some 3,000 members with the goal of setting limits on negotiations with the Taliban during peace talks. 30% of this assembly were women.
If women do not raise their voice and raise their policy and suggestions for peace, no one can represent women.
Dialogue with the Taliban also raised concerns among women's rights activists like Farhanaz Frotan, prompting her to initiate a social media movement called My Red Line.
My Red Line is the voice of Afghanistan for sustainable peace, which started in 2019 during the height of peace talks between U.S. and Taliban. So we can raise the people's voice, which is peace should be for all the people of Afghanistan and not limited to some. And the peace that comes to Afghanistan must be a sustainable peace.
While 2019 will be primarily remembered for the beginning of peace talks with the Taliban, it may also be remembered as the year women spoke up. Some 31% of the 2 million voters who cast their ballots in Afghan presidential elections were women.
Young women need to participate in election because we should work hard for our future.
According to a survey done by the Asia Foundation, 86.6% of Afghans support women's education, which has increased since 2018. And according to the same survey, for the first time in Afghanistan, 76% of Afghans support women working outside their homes. However, according to the Afghan Ministry of Women's Affairs, there has been a 1% increase in domestic violence cases against women. Deputy Minister Spojmay Wardak says one reason for the increase in domestic violence may be that the ministry is focusing more on educating women across the country about their rights. Simply put, women are no longer silent in their homes and are actively seeking legal assistance.
In the year 2019, officials of this ministry have traveled to 224 districts. We tried to focus more on districts than major cities, and one of our main programs was to educate women about their rights.
On the other hand, 28% of high positions in government are now made up of women.
The contribution of women to civil service has maximized. We are confident that their contribution exceeds 28% during the current year. It was 27% last year.
While the fear of the Taliban returning is very much alive in the hearts of millions of Afghan women, it seems more Afghans than ever before support Afghan women taking part in society. For Najiba Khalil in Washington and Lima Niazi in Kabul, Bejan Hamdard, VOA News.
Happening now in Asia, India plans to make a new attempt to land an unmanned mission on the moon in 2020 after a failed bid that last year. Work reportedly is going smoothly on the Chandrayaan-3 mission to put a rover probe on the moon's surface, said the Indian Space Research Organization chairman. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA News. And we're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. A stalled Rohingya refugee repatriation plan and the start of a judicial process by the West African nation of Gambia for genocide charges against Myanmar mark the troubled end of the second year since more than 700,000 Rohingya Muslims fled a brutal Burmese army clearance operation in Myanmar's Rakhine State, crossing over into Bangladesh. Steve Sanford has this report for VOA from Bangkok.
Rohingya refugees faced another year of uncertainty as fences were built around the camps and internet communications were cut off by the government. Despite the pressure to go home, refugees would be facing the same restrictions as before, along with the added hardship of being put into internment-like camps.
Rohingya refugees are extremely vulnerable to trafficking, and many refugees find it extremely difficult to live in the camps. Many refugees are boarding boats or getting into cars and moving from Bangladesh to Malaysia for safety and security. We believe that there will be an increase in the new year of this trend.
More than two-thirds of the $920 million targeted by the UN and its partners was raised to support the camps this year. Asia's leaders of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations Summit in Bangkok avoided discussing the ongoing Rohingya crisis in what critics saw as pressure exerted by Myanmar signaling the region's continued adherence to non-interference. Rohingya exiles such as Mohammed Nasin say the refusal to accept refugees is devastating for victims who have already suffered.
We escaped to Thailand, Malaysia, and Bangladesh, or wherever, but we still live in fear and have to hide because we have no identification for countries to accept us.
On the world stage, Myanmar's government faced the first of three cases related to the brutal and ongoing treatment of the Rohingya civilians. Myanmar's de facto leader and Nobel Peace Prize laureate Aung San Suu Kyi defended the brutal 2017 clearance operation in a hearing initiated by Gambia at The Hague, alleging Myanmar committed genocide against the Rohingya population. Many experts believe that justice will be served, and with it, a message to international businesses linked to the Myanmar military.
Asian companies should not be complacent about their international obligations under business and human rights, because most of these Asian companies have partners and supply chains that and markets in Western countries as well. So in a globalized economy, nobody can run away from their legal liability when it comes to genocide.
As the Rohingya refugees await major decisions that will affect their future both in Bangladesh and Myanmar in 2020, camp inhabitants brace for another year of hardships and unpredictability. Steve Sanford, VOA News, Bangkok, Thailand.
And you're listening to VOA Asia.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This news from VOA Asia, fugitive former Nissan chairman Carlos Ghosn met with Lebanon's president after his escape from Japan, where he was smuggled out of house arrest by a private security company. One of the sources said Ghosn was greeted warmly by the president and is now in a buoyant and combative mood. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features. This is VOA Asia. And VOA Asia continues. One of Washington's most unique museums, called the Newseum, closed its doors on New Year's Eve. For 12 years, the museum had served as an interactive environment dedicated to journalism and promotion of the First Amendment. Maria Proust has the story, narrated by Anna Rice.
Fragments of the Berlin Wall and New York City Twin Towers after 9/11. A shattered car of a TV crew working in Yugoslavia. Displays of front pages of newspapers around the world. DC's Newseum, located in the very heart of the U.S. Capitol, has been the symbol of free press and the First Amendment for over a decade.
Over 10 million visitors have come to the museum in this location through our time here. Half of those visitors are school children. So to see them interact with things like the Berlin Wall and learn about the Cold War, or even our 9/11 gallery, which they weren't even born for, that is something that's really rewarding for us to see.
After operating for more than 12 years, the museum has gone bankrupt. The building that housed the museum for all these years has been sold to Johns Hopkins University for $372 million.
The museum started over 20 years ago as an idea from our founder, Al Newhart, to educate and convene conversations about the First Amendment and the craft of journalism. That small nugget of an idea started in Roslyn, Virginia, in a lovely museum there. And after about a decade in that location, we decided to move here to Washington, D.C.
Millions of dollars were spent to purchase the land steps from the U.S. Capitol. And though all ambitious dreams were achieved, the museum started to struggle.
I feel like the First Amendment and freedom to speech and the press is so important. It's how I grew up, and I think even in our country, it's under threat, and it's sad.
It's just very sad to see it go. I mean, there's so much documented history that is really, you can miss some really important things, and it really makes you think about how important the press is.
The closure of museum comes at a tough time for traditional journalism. About 2,000 U.S. newspapers have closed over the past 15 years, and less than half of the U.S. population say they trust the media, according to a Gallup poll, down from more than 70% in the 1970s. Journalist Ron Lyons says he came to D.C. from Detroit specifically to see the museum.
This is what we're fighting for. This is why we do what we do. Not only to get these awards and get these accolades, but to show that freedom of the press is important and the public voices matter.
The museum hopes to continue its mission of stressing the importance of journalism and free press in an online forum. For Maria Prus in Washington, NRI's VOA News.
This news break from VOA Asia, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un has announced he is no longer bound by his self-imposed moratorium on long-range missile and nuclear tests. In his New Year's address, Kim also warned of unspecified, quote, shocking action if the U.S. does not soften its stance in nuclear talks. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, the worldwide refugee crisis continues to deepen. According to the UN, the world is witnessing the highest levels of displacement on record. Spurred by conflict and persecution, the numbers of displaced are expected to rise further in the future as climate change pushes people out of their homes. Refugee advocates say they worry that as the number of displaced people rises, developed countries are being forced to turn away refugees and asylum seekers, adding to their plight and suffering. VOA's Ardita Dunalari reports.
Conflict and persecution continued to push people outside their communities and their countries in 2019, adding to the unprecedented scope of the global refugee crisis.
The number of total displaced people is over 70 million. Of that, about 25 million are refugees. And we have seen, of course, with ongoing new flare-ups in Syria, as well as Venezuela, we've seen numbers increasing in some of the population.
UNHCR spokesperson Chahagadini Williams says 2019 saw low numbers of refugees returning to their home countries due to continued inhospitable circumstances. In 2019, as in the previous year, the largest numbers of refugees were Syrians, Afghans, South Sudanese, Rohingyas, and Somalis. Experts warn that climate change will become a leading cause for population movements. The UNHCR official says natural disasters already have sparked large-scale displacements in countries like South Sudan and Somalia.
Not only because people are forced to leave because they can't earn a livelihood or farm their lands, but also because those drought-ridden areas, the water becomes a weapon used by military groups to control the populations.
Meanwhile, human rights groups speak of a crisis of solidarity between refugees and nations that historically have welcomed them. The groups note rising rates of forced returns and repatriations by developed countries.
It's a lack of direct support through financial support and resettlement. It's also the example that the European Union, the United States, Australia, that many of the rich countries have themselves, you know, blocked refugees.
U.S. President Donald Trump issued in 2019 executive orders adding new restrictions to those applying for refugee status, stressing a need to put the welfare of Americans first. The European Union and several developed nations have also implemented so-called deterrence policies to curb the number of refugees and asylum seekers at their borders. Such policies, says Frelick, send a clear signal to countries that are on the front line, like Turkey, to push back at their own borders against people seeking shelter and support. Gedini Williams acknowledges the problem.
I think there definitely is a very difficult climate right now for refugees. We are seeing some of the most unwelcoming, harsh rhetoric that we've experienced.
At a time when some governments stress a need to take care of their own citizens first, activists like Bill Frelick see a lack of empathy and politicians failing to confront racism, xenophobia, and Islamophobia. As a result, he says support for aiding people in dire circumstances has waned.
The right to flee, the right to seek asylum, is essentially the last human right that people have. It's when all else fails, when you would be faced with genocide, when your life and death hang in the balance.
The year ended with a show of solidarity during UNHCR's Global Refugee Forum in mid-December, when countries, businesses, and international institutions made over 770 pledges of support. While the pledges are not written in stone, UNHCR hopes they will kindle renewed international commitment to aiding refugees in the future. Ardita Dunelari, VOA News, Washington.
Finally, what would it be like to attend a concert with thousands of other people without ever leaving your home? Well, Matt Dibble put on a virtual reality headset to find out.
Do you want to see an awesome concert in VR?
I recently met Jarg Karlhofer in a virtual concert space he designed.
So we are in a tunnel. We are going this direction in a few seconds. While we are going, I can just tell you a little bit about what you're doing. We are Noise VR from Hamburg, and we are building a platform for musicians to play live in virtual venues.
Is this based on a real place?
This actually is. It's in Germany, in Hamburg, in a shipyard. And we basically scanned a lot of the surrounding and put it into VR and made a virtual venue out of it. So if you just come with me, I can show you around a bit. We are watching Michael Wolny. He's a piano player from Germany. We have some rock bands, some hip-hop artists, so we have a broad range of different genres. And as you can see, we are doing a little bit more than is possible in the real life, so we have flying ships and dancing cranes. Well, basically, we work together with artists to create their dream stages.
So this is a way that a smaller band might reach an international audience.
Well, the problem with the music industry today is that money has to come from live concerts. And most bands actually have enough fans. They're just spread around the globe. We don't have to be in the same room. We could be tens of thousands of kilometers away from each other and still experience this.
And the audience members are meeting each other, too.
They're meeting each other. They can see each other just like we're doing.
Feel like expressing yourself visually? There are tools for that. And there is plenty of room to explore. And unlike most concerts, there are no lines for the bathroom. Matt Dibble for VOA News from virtual Hamburg.
Well, that is VOA Asia for today. Not virtual at all. You can visit us on our website, voanews.com. We're also on Twitter, on YouTube, and Facebook. We're pretty much everywhere. Thanks so much for joining us. Always great to have you with us. We'll be back with you again tomorrow. And until then, be well.